for so very long, it's been...
Go on, George. Tell how it's gonna be.
But in the end, the commish only said...
We figured it 17 different ways. And every time we figured it, it was no good. Because no matter how we figured it...
But no matter how you figure it out, I still don't get as much as anybody else.
Somebody don't like the way we figured it. So now, there's only one way to figure it. And that is every man for himself.
When Black Friday comes,
this is the end.
It's the end of the world.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
Or is it now? As a new year hits, through it all, Beaver Nation moves ahead with resiliency and hope.
Sun's up. Mm-hmm. Looks okay. The world survives into another day.
And the way forward goes through, as it must, The Joe Beaver Show with John Warren and Mike Parker.
A number of times I heard these guys' voices over and over and over. Still can't find it.
Ah, can't find it? We can help.
This here is 1240.
1240?
It's always been 1240.
My client says it's 1240.
Yeah, plus 93.7 FM and streaming live at KEJOAM.com and on the KEJO app. It's The Joe Beaver Show.
Good morning, everybody. My only opportunity this week to get to be on the show, and it's nice to be with you.
Good to have you back.
Cue up your gallery.
I'd rather you be there.
I do. Yeah, I was hoping to be there all the way through. I thought the best tribute to the late, great Jimmy Anderson would be for all of the Beaver players and coaches not to be able to attend.
Yeah. But it's the way he would have wanted it.
Yeah, Scott Spiegelberg will join us at 12:05 today to give us, he is the master of ceremonies for the event tomorrow and the tribute to Jimmy, with some great speakers, videos, I think some music planned, some other things, and we'll have some details from Scott on all of that. We'll also be visiting next hour with a young person within the Oregon State Baseball Analytics Program, which is vitally important. I'm not so sure that it is as important as the world that we'll be discussing at 11:30 today. Kyle Bjornstad, the head of Damnation Collective, with the portal opening again, the transfer portal officially on Monday. That may be in the long run, and essentially what your payroll is, what you're able to do in retention, and even now, legally, if it comes to it, you can still, now, the NCAA has cleared the way to actually, even though originally the intent was never to use NIL as a recruiting inducement, it is now, NIL can be used in recruit. You can have conversations and say, if you come here, we will do this. Now, people have been doing that.
Right.
But they weren't, quote unquote, supposed to.
Right.
Well, that's gone by the boards. It's now legal.
Just like they're not supposed to tamper and talk to you when you're in a season.
Yeah. It's true, and that goes on all the time, too.
Sure.
Anyway, Kyle Bjornstad at 11:30, but what Amelia Moore and the Pride of Hoquiam, and I feel like it's appropriate that we are talking about one of the great lives ever to come out of Hoquiam, Washington, and our own Jimmy Anderson. When we visit with Scott, this is my first day on the show this week. The last week before that, we were blessed with conversations with many Oregon State basketball people paying tribute to Jimmy. And we'll do that with Scott at 12:05. But with Scott, it'll be more a sense of here, as you're all invited, we're all invited into Gill Coliseum tomorrow for the celebration of a great life. But a great life that began in Hoquiam. Or at least, I don't know if he was born in Hoquiam or born nearby. I don't know that exactly. Perhaps the official obituaries that have been filed will indicate that. But I know that Jimmy went to high school in Hoquiam, and we have somebody who graduated recently from Hoquiam High School, is now at Oregon State and part of Brad Brown's outstanding analytics team. One of the things that Mitch and the Beavers have done, and Pat was just beginning to kind of come around to it, in his final season in 2018. It's not as though these analytics and so on weren't available. They were. But he was coming around and beginning to use some of the data that was available in the analytics world. But Mitch has taken it, being a little younger and perhaps even more, exposed to it in growing up. We will... Okay, I don't know what's going on. We're getting a call off the air that sounds important, and I appreciate that, and John will share with me here in a moment. Is that Paul? Okay, we'll talk about it off the air in a moment. Okay. The nature of the call and your pausing and hesitation and even using the phrase, well, Mike will be da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, worries me. So we'll take the break here soon.
It's not a big deal.
Okay, and then we'll find out a little bit more.
But you would...
But
I didn't want your reaction on the air, trying to steer things.
I appreciate
things.
That. You take great care of me. I always depend on the kindness of friends and strangers just to make it through a day. Thank you for that, John. Now,
you look good, by the way.
Oh, well, got a little sun down in Vegas and a little bit here this morning while visiting with Kyle and visiting with Amelia and Scott Spielberg sitting outside next to the dog park.
Still a little chilly right now.
But just when you're sitting directly in the path of the sun, Al Martino, cue him up, kind of an underrated song.
Never heard of
Al's life. And you've heard of him and you've heard of, I mean, he's in The Godfather. So there you go. Talk about forever.
Okay, what role? What role?
Richard Johnny, whoever the Sinatra type character is supposed to be.
Oh, I like that guy.
And here you are telling me about The Godfather, my entire existence. You're telling me, oh, you think you're a movie guy.
That's
you
right.
You haven't seen The
Godfather. That's right.
I'm now telling you about Al Martino.
Have you seen one and two?
I've seen one and two, three. I never will see because it's just not. It doesn't.
You
it's not part of the same field.
You
got to
complete it.
The one and two are works of. They're masterworks. I won't see three because I don't want to see
it. Will
I don't want to see one and two tainted by three.
It would be. You'd go. What is this?
Yeah, exactly. I don't want it. But anyway, Al Martino, To the Door of the Sun. I think maybe his last miniature hit. But Al Martino played the role of Johnny whomever in The Godfather.
Was he a crooner back in the day then?
Yeah, and I think he was sort of modeled after Sinatra and Sinatra's life and supposed ties to the mob.
I absolutely remember that character.
Okay, well, anyway, Martino, To the Door of the Sun. When you're sitting directly, to paraphrase Al, in the path of the sun as I was this morning, felt good, felt warm. It felt warm and good. So we have conversations coming up. Kyle Bjornstad, in a very important time in collegiate athletics as the head of the Damnation Collective and the portal opening Monday, we're going to talk a lot about the work in basketball. We're not going to get, okay, now this player and this player and this player. We're not going to get that specific, but Kyle, they have plans in place. He has plans in place, and it's important for retention. It's also perhaps even important down the road with the door open to for inducements, you know,
Did you see Nick Saban this week? He was on Capitol Hill, and he was basically, I don't know really what it was for. I think he was trying to tell the politicians, look, something might need to be changed. Initially, when he retired, he said it wasn't because of Nil and Portal, but in his testimony, it really was. And he even quoted his wife as coming to him and saying, what are we doing? Because as he and TJ and I had a really good conversation about this, as he and other older generations are kind of aging up and maybe out, I could put myself in it too, get into this to better young people's lives and teach them. Again, it was all about school and then the scholarship and going through school. But he said, most of these guys aren't going pro. He goes, even in the greatest program, which was ours, one or two go pro.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm here to better these young men's lives. And it's gotten to the point of, as his wife said, and he said, it's all about a handout. Well, how much are you going to pay me? And he says, that's jaded it a lot. And, of course, he's talking football, and we're talking a little basketball here because the window opens
on
Monday.
Same landscape, though.
Same landscape, same idea. And it isn't anything against what Kyle's doing. In fact, what Kyle's doing is great because this is the world we're in. And as much as I lament it all, I say, if my son or myself were in it, absolutely, I'd try to get as much as possible. But this, you know, I wish the system would go back or go away. But while we're in it, we do the best we can with it.
A lot of people I know are somewhat dubious or even skeptical or cynical or jaded about Nick Saban or others of the power programs that talk about this when it's probable and likely that a nil world, whatever you call it, a payroll,
existed,
has been operating at the major programs for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But it was plausible deniability for the late, great John Wooden to say, I don't want to know anything about Sam Gilbert.
Yeah.
Who? I don't know what's going on.
If you just give me if I don't know, then it didn't happen.
And I think the great John Wooden, and that's why Paul Valenti and Jimmy and others, even though they respected his unbelievable coaching acumen, and even once he got the players, how he coached them, the values of the pyramid that he instilled in them, as always with all human beings, a great deal of a number of flaws and things that you look at, and David Halberstam was brave enough to write about all of that in The Breaks of the Game about John himself, the sainted John Wooden, the great man, great coach. But he did look the other way when it came to Sam Gilbert.
Right.
Okay, so he's not perfect, nor is Saban, nor is anyone.
Right, right. So that was probably a part of it.
The point being, though, that I think Nick's right as, well, who is he to say? He's benefiting. Well, okay. Yeah, that's right, too. The cynicism towards Saban not being the right person to be talking about how bad this is when he, in a sense, benefited from it all. But now that everybody can, he doesn't like it. I get that. I get the cynicism towards Saban. But he isn't wrong, though, either,
right,
in terms of what it's become and the devaluation of a college education and the scholarship and spending time in an institution and having a place to live and work and grow and get a good education that I think, I don't know if it was who we had on recently or somebody talking about, we at Stanford, when we recruit, we don't talk about a four-year scholarship. We talk about a 40-year scholarship.
Well, that's smart.
We're setting you up for life. And I believe that's true at Oregon State and Washington State and San Diego State and institutions that if you commit on an athletic scholarship and go to class and become part of that culture, that family with good people and good coaches and a community around you, there is great value there. And you have jobs for life. Oregon State people will take care of Oregon State people. Mm-hmm. You'll end up getting work in various, you know, private sectors in the world because you committed yourself to the discipline and the work of an education. I mean, that feels like, and I think what Saban is saying, that's all gone. It's just now, our payroll? What can we pay this guy
pretty
and that
much,
guy?
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't disagree with Nick that that's what it's become, even if people look askance at Saban being the guy saying it.
Right, right.
So I think we need to make a distinction there. Now, on the other side of things, as we await Kyle Bjornstad at 11:30, Scott Spiegelberg at 12:05, and young Amelia Moore coming up at 12:25. She just received a scholarship to attend an analytics conference, cutting-edge stuff about what's next and what's the latest and where are we going from here. And she came back, according to Brad Brown, who runs all of that program and does a great job with it. Brad is with the Beaver baseball team as we speak in Salt Lake City. Amelia's here. But she will share some of her thoughts about what may be coming down the road. And she even told Brad, hey, now, there's some ideas I learned here that we might want to implement now here at Oregon State. So I don't know what that means, but she's going to share a little bit of that with us at 12:25.
Well, one question for her would be, does Oregon State have the right computers to do these new things? And what is a new thing? And how? Boy, there's a lot of questions
Exactly.
There's a lot of questions
She's just coming back from a conference about all of this.
Speaking of that, a quick plug for Marine Layer Podcast. I was just listening to the first part of it with Aaron Goldsmith, and TJ and his buddy Kyle had Aaron Goldsmith on for a really good amount of time, and they go into a lot of that. They go into a lot of that and talk, too, about the portion that I heard was about how do you use it.
Yes.
And Aaron made a really good He said, "Look, you don't want to bore the people. Once you get too into numbers, the eyes glaze over. You lose the audience. You also don't want to talk down to them. You don't want to do all these different things in a broadcast. But at the same time, you don't want to ignore it either." And he says, "It's a balance. It's a constant balance with that." And I think that one of the things that he said that is a really good deal on that as a broadcaster anyway, with all this information, and it's a lot more in the pros than it is in college, but we'll learn how much we have in college now a little bit later on with Amelia Moore. But he said as a broadcaster, he goes, I don't recap it. I write it down and have it and then tell the people in just layman's terms. Just, you know, in other words, don't say he has a WRC
spin rate of
2.9 da 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 and da 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 da. And the best in the majors is da 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 da. He more than that, he says he has a really good spin rate. He has a really good this, which helps get him on base or whatever it might be. As just kind of a filter through his brain and say it like you would say it if you're having a beer in the bar with someone.
Goldschmidt does that very well.
Yeah.
He's just one of the best young, talented broadcasters in the business. And I like what our own Josh Warden is doing in terms of filtering in.
Mm-hmm.
He has a direct link via Twitter, I think, to Brad Brown, and I'm going to try to – I need to do more of that. I need to have a little bit more of a – instead of talking about Ina Schlatter – I might need to talk about what Amelia Moore got back from her conference. You know, well, Johnny Pesky hesitated holding the ball. Was it his fault? Okay, 1946, you know, Pesky, would he have thrown out Ina Schlatter sliding at the plate in 46 if he doesn't hesitate? That may be less relevant than what Amelia learned at her conference. So I need to find balance as well.
Okay, but as you do that, don't get away from what you do.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do.
I know, and I know you got to kind of stay with the times, but here's an example. I'm sitting there at one of the games, Jacob Craig hits a home run, and it comes out on Twitter that it was the hardest hit baseball
in modern baseball analytics. Beaver Analytics history, yes.
If I didn't see that and I just saw the hit, I'd say, wow, that was a great hit, but it didn't seem like it went to the moon and back.
Right.
A Jacoby Ellsbury shot or a Michael Conforto or Adley Rutschman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if that was the hardest hit, then I want to see the analytics on the home run I saw at UCLA.
Right.
20 feet above the batter's eye.
You might be able to get that. It may be available.
Yeah, I don't know. So,
right.
So,
I know.
I didn't notice it as being anything other than, holy cow, that was a big hit. But I wouldn't, if someone would have said, with no analytics and no numbers to back it up, if they would have said that was the hardest hit ball ever by a Beaver in modern analytics, I would have said, how far back does modern analytics go?
Right. Because 118 miles per hour, exit velo. The exit velocity was the highest ever recorded. Then when Bazzano made an out hitting the ball 113 miles per hour, everybody was marveling. That may have been the hardest hit ball ever. But that was caught for an out.
Yeah,
I mean, we do have different levels and categories now.
Yeah.
Then here comes Willie Davis hitting .284 with 14 homers and 67 runs batted in. I mean, there is more to life than that.
And Jimmy did a good job yesterday. Jim Wilson on with us, and he delved into all of this with us, which was fun. It was a good conversation about how, he will look at that and things like that, but at the He kind of just goes back to the basics, batting average, on base percentage.
And there's a certain point, too, and that's why the info and the information, the data and the analytics that Goldschmidt has much more of than Josh or any of us have, and printouts, full printouts. You've been to a Major League Baseball game and been in the press room even years ago, long before when we all had laptops and phones to get a lot of this stuff. Major League Baseball numbers, crunchers, and people releases. The notes are many, many pages, Johnny, with more information about this, that, and the other that, you know, in the end, there was so much of it in the last 7-8 years of Vin Scully's career, I'm told, that he had a guy that would take those 70-80 page releases, game notes, day by day, and pick out, okay, now Vinny will like that. Okay, now that's not.
Wow.
Okay, and have it, and Vin would have a packet of stuff. Now, he used to do all that on his own, but in the later years, he only did it for 67 years. In the later years, he was getting some help to consolidate the voluminous material and thus then be able to put it in a form within pitch to pitch, within inning to inning. You don't have time to go through all of that stuff. So Goldschmidt picks out a few things. He has them off to the side. And if something happens in a game that thus becomes, oh, well, I just read today that his weighted runs created or whatever is this, that's the best in the league. And we just saw an example of it.
And that's a good way of how he might have done it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's take a break, Doc. You can share with me what you heard off the air on the Downward Dog phone line. Kyle Bjornstad, Scott Spiegelberg, and Amelia Moore today. We appreciate you joining us. I want to talk about the Pac-12 tournament in a moment. And just a text I received from a friend last night in which he said, something about Washington State. And I didn't care. And that's how I felt about wrote him back and said, I'm not watching. What's going on? He was asking me a specific question. And I didn't want to watch, and I didn't care.
Yeah.
And I'm more uncaring than ever about whatever else goes on down there. Now, goodbye to all of you.
I don't care about that, but I will care about the tournament next week.
I may want some of you. You never could. Paul Valenti and Jimmy never could. But you might almost want Oregon to win the whole thing. So they get in. Then you have Oregon, Colorado. You have more teams in the tournament. That would be the only reason to
Because
Oregon.
The money comes
back. The more
back.
Money comes to us.
That's right.
We break and come back on the Joe Beaver Show. How would you respond to that? We're going to have a quick segment here. I'm glad that what you shared with me from Paul was not all that important. When he called, I thought, uh-oh, what have we missed? Because I heard, and you said, Mike's not going to be. I thought it was sad news. It's not. Paul insists that the name of the town is Hoquiam, that he used to live there. I have twice now called different businesses, and we just got off the phone with Hoquiam High School. The lady answered, Hoquiam High School, and I'm just saying to you, Paul, now, that we put her on speaker, and she said, well, I've always said Hoquiam. You asked, do some other people around town say Hoquiam? She hesitated and said, most of us say Hoquiam.
Yeah.
So, Paul, I give you that.
I did ask. One of the things I asked, because we got into this with Josh, he said,
Starkville?
Should I say Starkville? Right. And I said, probably not, because that's more of an accent.
True.
Then because the word Ville is the word Ville. So it's Starkville, Pleasantville, Hoquiamville. It's an accent, whereas the pronunciation of Corvallis is just locals saying Kerr.
True.
And they locals like Doug Blair and even Josh Worden, they understand that everyone says Cor, and Doug says Cor when he does commercials. He'll say Corvallis. Just talking with buddies and being a local and being born and raised, you can slide into something just like you slide into Starkville with an accent, or you slide into Kerr familiarity type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are some that actually have specific ways of saying Hoquiam wouldn't be an accent. It would be the way it's pronounced.
Yeah. There's a town up there, for example, that looks like Sequim, right? But it's pronounced
Squim.
Yeah. So, to me, we're on the same page in terms of Hoquiam or Hoquiam. It looks like Hoquiam. I mean, that's how I would pronounce it and how I originally did pronounce it because it looks like Hoquiam. But the locals that I've talked to, and I've talked to three different ones, and they've all confirmed and said, it's Hoquiam.
Well, I'm glad I never need to go there because
well,
I'd be back and forth on it. I'd be like,
Anyway, thank you, Paul. But he called as soon as, the phone rang as soon as I began to talk about far more important matters. We have one of the great souls ever to come out of that town. Jimmy Anderson being celebrated.
What time is that tomorrow?
It's 3:00 at Gill Coliseum. And we'll get some details on the nature of the celebration when the doors open, in lieu of flowers, donations to be made, I believe, to the St. Vincent de Paul Food Pantry Kitchen within St. Mary's here in town. I believe that's what the family has requested. But Scott will confirm all of that. Scott Spiegelberg at 12:05. Amelia Moore at 12:25. And coming up next, after a quick timeout, the world we're in, Kyle Bjornstad and the great work and important work that he is involved with as the head of the Damnation Collective, as the portal opens again on Monday, and we'll talk specifically about basketball, not about how much is so-and-so going to get? What are you going to do for? But we're going to talk about men's and women's hoops, other developments within the very important world of name, image, and likeness, and what almost seems to come down to these days to quote unquote payroll. What's your, what do you got? What can you do? Ted Robinson shared with me that Bobby Hurley shared with him that when their season ended, Bobby said, well, I'm on the phone as soon as I get out of here. start raising more money and asking our people for more money, because we got to have it to kind of rebuild ourselves.
That's where we've come in just 3 short years.
And fundraising's always been vitally important. Scholarship funds and our Beaver Nation is all. I mean, that's what these arms, these very important arms, have always been about. But it's quickly moved into, you know, the stakes are, I mean, they're so much higher and the needs are so much greater that that's what coaches who are charged to coach and to develop young student athletes are spending quite a bit of time on the need that Bobby Hurley expressed to Ted Robinson. Mm. I'm going to miss all those folks in the Pac-12. Don't get me wrong. I had a sense of melancholy over me when saying goodbye to people and saying, well, I hope our paths cross again. I hope you do some of our games. I hope we see each other again. Guys like Ted and Roxy and Don McLean and some of the people behind the scenes, like Jessica Altman and people that we've enjoyed being
around. So many
around
people we've had on this show.
Through the years.
Yeah.
We were kind of saying goodbye to each other. Well, we'll see what's next. But no more Pac-12 tournament. I saw that that we will be in the Orleans Arena for the WCC. They have one more year. Canzano wrote that.
Okay.
So the Beavers will be in Vegas, but it'll be in the Orleans for at least 1 year. Whether the Mountain West may move into the what I read, the Mountain West may hold their tournament
T-Mobile?
In T-Mobile next year.
And the women in MGM Grand?
I'd like to see the WCC move there, if nothing else. That's a good venue. It's more on the strip and kind of in the heart of things.
And it's big and, you know, glitzy and glamour.
Plenty big. We'll take a break, come back with Kyle Bjornstad next. Thanks for joining us on the Joe Beaver Show. We continue on the Joe Beaver Show. Mike Parker with John Warren, Scott Spiegelberg, and Amelia Moore to come. Amelia coming back from a Sabre Analytics conference. And we'll get some thoughts from a young person from Hoquiam and talk about one of the great citizens ever of that wonderful town, small town in Washington, in our own Jimmy Anderson. Scott Spiegelberg will be the master of ceremonies tomorrow for the celebration of life for Jimmy at Gill. And I know that we're going to be talking with Kyle Bjornstad, the co-founder with Dick Oldfield, and now Kyle running the Damn Nation Collective, getting plenty of help and support in that world. Don't get me wrong. He is, and he'll, I'm sure, express that. And he joins us with the portal about to open again officially on Monday. Kyle Bjornstad joins us. But, Kyle, I segue into our conversation with you and appreciate your perspective on these very important matters you're involved with. But when I say Jimmy Anderson, I know that he has touched so many generations, in fact, 8 different decades of Oregon State basketball, including your own while you were a player and playing in the Coach Craig Robinson era. I mean, Jimmy was everywhere. He was around all the time. I know your heart, as all of us in Beaver Nation, goes out to the Anderson family, but Jimmy was an all-time great, wasn't he, Kyle?
Oh, Jimmy, he was the absolute best. You know, going back to my playing days, obviously, which wasn't that long ago, I like to think, but, you know, there was hardly a practice where he wasn't sitting in his folding chair in the corner of Gill, you know, watching everything we did. And, you know, he kept quiet during practice, but he was never afraid to kind of pull you aside afterwards. And whether it was just talk about life in general or little things that he noticed on the court, he was a staple. And he, you know, I think he'll always be a staple and definitely a treasure for Beaver Nation.
And Kyle, when we talk about a person such as Jimmy, and I think about the generations and the decades that and lives that he touched. We move now to 2024, and this 15th of March, and the portal opens again on the 18th. The portal, you know, if you said to Jimmy when he got here, well, he came through the portal out of, you know, Grays Harbor Junior College to play for Slats Gill, so he understands the whole world of transferring in. But this is a man with a lifelong love for Oregon State College, then university, and touching all these lives and generations of people that will be celebrated tomorrow. That, I hope, Kyle, in the kind of wild, crazy world we're in, that Oregon State is a place that has people like Jimmy and others will always resonate somehow, some way. So before we kind of get into the weeds of where we are, will Oregon State still, in your world, and the name, image, and likeness, and the Damn Nation Collective, is that still something real, something to emphasize and quote-unquote sell in this space that we're in now, what Oregon State's all about?
Mike, that's a, I love how you frame that. And you're exactly right. I mean, Jimmy and others, right? He's a prime example that we're talking about right now of, you know, the Oregon State way. And I say that a lot to the point where I'm always thinking, am I overstating that and, you know, boring people with that? But there really is a special way that we go about our business, the way we think about things, the way that we are not afraid to work harder than others, not cut corners, you know, take shortcuts to get to where you want to go. And, you know, when it comes to, you know, the age that we're in, NIL, the portal, all those things, you know, one thing can still be true while all this change is going on nationally. It's the Beaver way and how we're going to go about it. You know, we have to be, you know, intentional in what we're doing. We have to roll up our sleeves and work really, really hard to protect what we have and continue to build. But to your point, Oregon State operates in a certain manner, and I think that's why our community and our culture is so strong, that we don't step away from, you know, how we think and how we operate, and that's what makes us a really special place.
Kyle Bjornstad, our guest. That said and acknowledged, and it's not just rhetoric, it feels true, it resonates, Kyle. That said, rolling up your sleeves, the portal opens Monday. You, in the Damnation Collective, and the world you're in, are ready to work, you know, ready to operate in that, however new and different it is, right? Tell us a little bit, Kyle, about the mission going forward now.
Well, you know, there's a lot of focus on the 18th with the portal opening, and it's one thing to say it's, you know, it's time to roll up our sleeves and get to work, but, you know, I'd argue, and, you know, a lot of this isn't public facing necessarily, but, you know, our sleeves have been rolled up for quite some time, building a foundation with Beaver Nation to be ready for the 18th. Now, you know, these kids, and they are kids, this is a really, you know, new time in athletics. It's evolving rapidly. A lot of things are being thrown at these kids from different angles. And so for us, it's how are we best prepared to help them in this situation? And that's education. That's being, you know, having support behind us to, when the portal does open, we talk all the time, there's so much focus on recruiting and luring kids to schools with dollars and all of that. You know, I've said from day one, this is about retaining what we have, taking care of our kids, rewarding that loyalty and, you know, the hard work that they've put in while wearing the orange and black. That is our focus. And if we do right by our current kids, we're obviously going to be attractive to others that are looking at Oregon State. And that, to me, is where the culture and the community and everybody that touches Beaver Nation, that's what differentiates ourselves. And that's not work. That's just who we are. You can't fake who we are. And I think that comes through loud and clear.
Kyle, having come through both the time when there was no portal, we all can say that because it's only a couple of years old that we're into this. Having come through that time and having come through a time prior to NIL and being a part of all of this and being a part of the basketball team before all of this, and now doing what you're doing now, do you see the seedy side of it, even at the good places where there's a player will you know say things now that they never would have, like, well, they're offering me more, and maybe it's not the player, maybe it's their representation or their parents, I don't know, but does it get you down having seen what it was before, and now you're seeing what it is now? Does it get you down, like, oh man, this I wish this wouldn't have happened because of seeing the darker side of it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, early on, I'll admit I was down a little bit just because, and I think it's just the way that it's evolved and how it's been rolled out. There's unintended consequences for all these decisions, and I don't think people, you know, were forward thinking enough as they made some of the early decisions on how this was going to work, what the ramifications were going to be down the road, and now that's catching up in this space. But I do believe in general, the idea of NIL, if done properly, there's no problem. There's no reason to not give kids opportunities. But the way it's running right now, as you just look at this landscape in general, yeah, it does, it does get you down a little bit, because a lot of the things that are being done, I figured, are outside the lines of how they should be. But it just motivates me more that, look, this is the wild, wild west. This is not sustainable. And so what I'm really focused on is not what else is going on out there, but what are we doing in our bubble that's going to truly support these kids, put together a program that is sustainable and long-lasting, to where, you know, some of that stuff's going to happen and it's going to fizzle out, but we're going to be on good, solid foundation. So I try not to focus. Now, I have to be aware of all of those things. I have to, you know, take notice of what's going on. But sometimes it's more important to learn what not to do than it is to learn what to do.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's what my focus is just that.
No, that's well said. And, you know, you said not sustainable. I've been saying that since the beginning. Anybody else who understands, look, it's not sustainable, because the Blue Bloods will always have more. And then it'll almost be like the Blue Blood list will get smaller, because there's only so many handful of teams in like an SEC, an LSU, or a Texas, you know, now. I mean, there are so many other schools, like an Oregon State, Washington State, Mid-American schools, you know, the Mountain West, and virtually everybody, even in power conferences, that, you know, go into the well every single year to keep players from the average fans. Got to be really, really tough. So what is sustainable? Yeah. What is sustainable?
So what sustainable is, and you don't want to give away all the secrets, but it's just, you know, Beaver fans listening, so that's an easy one for me to answer.
Yeah.
It's to your point, you can't just keep going back to the same well year after year after year. Especially not if you're counting on those people to continue to provide, you know, scholarship help for student athletes, to help, infrastructure and facilities. You still need, you know, those enhancements as we move along. So to answer your question, you have to answer, what is NIL? And NIL is giving these kids opportunities, and I'd argue not to be just on the backs of donors. We need donors' help for sure, especially as you get this going for the first 2-3 years. But you're leaning on business partners who have a business, a product, a service to sell that, you know, aligns nicely with a student athlete or a group of student athletes, and they can be paid to help promote something. That is sustainable. And so what we're in right now is we're still kind of in that proof of concept where we've got a good amount of business partners that have, you know, trusted us to test this theory. It's worked extremely well. So now, you know, they're bumping up their marketing spend and using student athletes to help promote. And the idea is you bring more and more of those partners on board. That is sustainable. And it's easing the burden on donors and, you know, the general fan to where they can continue to support like they always have through, you know, annual fund and through helping with facilities. So, but having said all of that, we're in a situation right now where we absolutely need both. We need both because it takes a while to build that sustainable pipeline, and we're always going to need some form of support from the fans.
Kyle Bjornstad joining us on the Joe Beaver Show, co-founder of the Damn Nation Collective. And Kyle, in our conversation earlier today, you talked about you've been on the administrative side of things with Oregon State and the right-hand man for Scott Barnes. But you've your mind and what you've had to do and kind of wrestling with all of these things, from administration to actually what you just talked about, business acumen, a business person, how does one run a business? I mean, you're kind of in that realm too. How do the two, administrative and business part of it, I guess, coalesce?
Yeah, I think it's been fun. I think it's been a match made in heaven. I do not know of a single collective in the country that has, you know, somebody doing the day-to-day with the administration, you know, specifically from college athletics, that background. So I like to think I'm armed and dangerous, understanding the do's and the don'ts and the compliance and all the complexities to all this. To be able to speak, you know, sit down and speak the language with student athletes, that I think that's great. You know, and another advantage I have is just the connectivity of the school and the supporters there are so many of our supporters that, you know, they own and operate or have built businesses. Mm-hmm. So to be able to pick their brain and, you know, go through different scenarios. And I think one of the best attributes I've always been able to bring to the table is I know I don't have all the answers and I'm always eager to learn. It's kind of that, you know, that walk-on mentality, right? I love to go to work every day and make everyone around me better. And I was happy to have that front row seat to watch the games, but I didn't necessarily need any of the credit. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's really fun to be able to kind of put your guard down a little bit and talk to really smart people who have done this, not NIL, but built businesses, strategic thinking. And then you couple that with the, you know, the knowledge that I got at Oregon State working with Scott and others. I think it's put us in a really good situation.
Kyle, has what you're doing, are you better off now than you were 6 months ago?
You know, it's a loaded question. It's yes, in many ways, yes. I think that, you know, the foundation is more solid in terms of, you know, what we're doing, having gone through it. You know, we asked early on, we asked a lot of these student athletes to trust us. What we say is what we're going to do. We've got to follow through. And I'm happy to say that we've literally, you know, come through on everything that we've said. Mm-hmm. So that is huge. And that's going to work to our benefit as we move forward, because I think one of the biggest issues just on the national landscape is there are a lot of promises being made that are not being kept. But at Oregon State, it's the exact opposite. And I think as this whole thing shakes itself out, at the end of the day, like all people always have, they're going to be able to point to that school in Corvallis and say they're doing it right and they're doing right by the kids. And that to me is the number one thing. Beyond that though, John, I would say, you know, we still have a long way to go. We still are scratching and clawing every day. We absolutely need more and more support as we go. So from that standpoint, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done.
Yeah. And in that respect, and we'll close again with anyone listening who now that, and we're going to talk specifically, pivot to basketball specifically here with the portal opening Monday, you're involved with all of Oregon State Athletics as the official collective of OSU Athletics, the Damn Nation Collective, and we'll give out just the way people can help. And you say any kind of help is appreciated, deeply appreciated. But before we get there, Kyle, what about come Monday and hoops specifically, if not specific players, although I'm probably going to ask you about one or two guys on the men's side that I'm very familiar with that people are already saying, well, you know, you got to retain Pope and Bilodeau. I mean, those are the guys whose names come up all the time in social media and elsewhere. But we're not just talking about those two. We're talking about both programs. We're talking about the structure of the entire programs. Are we not, Kyle?
Yeah, we're talking about everybody. Yeah. And that's what I was saying earlier. Everybody's been focused on Monday, the 18th, transfer portal. But, you know, a lot of the work has gone in over the past year. Would I say we've been able to support all these kids at the level we want to? No. You know, we're still new. We're still growing. We still need the resources to do it. But I am really proud that, you know, you bring up Tyler, you bring up the women's basketball team. We've worked with many of them and, you know, proven to them over the last year. Again, it comes back to we've done what we've said. We've been honest from the get-go with what we think we can do. We've delivered. And now let's pick that up a notch or two heading into this year. And I think we've got credibility with them. And, you know, these are really, really good kids that are dealing with a lot. And so, you know, they're getting a lot of information and comments from different places. And I think, you know, we've earned the respect of them, and we can have these conversations, and we want to do what we can to keep them at Oregon State.
Kyle, does the coach determine how much a player is offered and makes a point saying, no, if we're not doing that? You know what I mean? If a player's cocky and says, hey, you know, put you over a barrel, or who decides on that?
No, that is a collective thing, because, you know, if you think of this as a business, you know, I'm running it. I know what resources I have. Now, I have great relationships and always have with our coaches, and that goes back well before NIL was a thing. So do I talk to coaches? Yeah, and I always have. But when it comes to the operation of the collective, they trust me, and I know what I have to work with, and I'm going to put my best foot forward and do everything that I can everything that I absolutely can with the resources I have. So no, I never feel that pressure.
Kyle Bjornstad with us, Damnation Collective, on the Joe Beaver Show. One other thing, Kyle, we each have one more question, and then we'll get to the top of the hour here shortly. But football, to me, I know we're talking basketball now, and then the, you know, that the focus the next 45 days come Monday. But the football portal will open again at some point. I am just astonished by many things. But the retention level, it must speak somewhat to the overall culture, Oregon State, the coaches, what's going on in the collective world when it comes to delivering on promises and so on, Kyle, in that football's retention level, in spite of the upheaval and the disintegration of the conference, is still one of the best in the country. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, and I honestly, I never will take credit for that. It does come back to the coaches, the administrators, the culture, and just Beaver Nation in general. I mean, yeah, just to lay it out, Mike, 2 years ago, heading into last football season, we were number one in the Power Five for fewest football players in the portal. And then you know what's happened in the last year or so with the Pac-12 and a head coaching change. Those two things alone you'd think would really shake up a roster. And we weren't number one, but we were in the top five. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I can't take credit for the amazing culture that we have in and around this place, and the fact that the coaches, again, we've got the right coaches, they recruit the right athletes. It's not all about money. Now, do they want opportunities? Absolutely. But they're not asking for the world necessarily. And so I know it really is quite crazy to think about the fact that we've been able to retain as well as we have. But when you think about it, and you've been around a long time, Mike, it shouldn't be all that surprising when you know how special this place
is. Yeah, and when you say you don't take credit for, you're part of the culture, though, part of what Oregon State is all about. So keep up the great work. One last thing, John's got a question for you. But anybody interested right now to say, hey, I like this, I love our student athletes, what can I do through the collective? What's the best way to access that, Kyle, and go about it?
Yeah, go to the collective website, damnationcollective.com. And obviously, I'd love for your support. I'd love for you to commit and be a monthly member or one-time contribution, whatnot. But we're still in the education phase. If nothing else, go on there, hit our contact form. I will reach out to you and have a conversation and answer all of your questions so you can better understand what this is, how it works, how we operate. Those are the two main ways to do it.
I haven't been on the site for a while, so this question may, I don't know about this question. I just want to know, is there a way, should people know what players are getting, or is that bad form?
Yeah, that's typically something that, you know, that really, it's nobody's business necessarily, and that would have to be a student athlete decision if they want to broadcast that.
Okay.
I keep all that information confidential, and you never see that information floating around.
Okay.
And I would argue that most of the numbers you do hear being tossed around publicly are probably not very accurate.
Can a person earmark? Can somebody come to you and say, I'd like to give this to this, either student athlete or program? Can you get that specific as somebody that gives to the collective?
Yeah, I want to be really clear about this because I hear this question often. I try to keep people away from earmarking for specific athletes, but earmarking for specific programs all day long. And that goes back to my philosophy and having worked at the foundation and fundraising and all that. I will always carry out the wishes of the people that are supporting us. And if they want to support program XYZ or XY and Z, that's where the dollars are going
to go. Okay. Kyle, it's great to talk to you. We'll do it again down the road. Good luck come Monday. I know it's not just Monday. It's year-round now all the time, the conversations that you're having and going about it in the Oregon State way. Congratulations on that. Thanks for all that you're doing, and thanks for taking time for the Joe Beaver Show again. We appreciate it.
All right, fellas. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, Kyle. Kyle Bjornstad walked on with Craig Robinson and then continued to stay and work and continues to work.
He was fun. I called some games for you and on trips with Kyle.
Good young man, working hard, as he must, every day in this world that we're in. Scott Spiegelberg and Amelia Moore coming up next hour. Thanks for joining us.
The Joe Beaver.
Silver Show is on the air.
Try to remember.
Throw that screen intercepted. On his way to the house. Touchdown, Beavers.
As we try to recall how things used to be,
the Beavers have recovered a fumble on a flea flicker attempt.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away.
We seek to come to grips with the current state of affairs.
Nobody told me there'd be days like these. Strange days indeed. Strange days indeed.
All the while believing
things could be better than they were today.
As we wait, we invite you to join us for another run of the Joe Beaver Show, where our hearts always remain hopeful.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right.
And now, here come John and Mike on the Joe Beaver Show on 1240 Joe Radio.
I was thinking about that very song this morning and humming it, thinking it. Favorite Beatles song, because it's the truth. And it could only be written, you know, by a Beatle, by George Harrison. And so thus, he's my favorite Beatle. Why? Well, because he wrote that. That's why. And it's the truth for us.
For
here
us, yeah.
The sun.
That's right.
And they quit the latitude they lived in and grew up in. It's precious to them.
Oh, yeah. Over there, so, you kidding me? It's like it is over here.
My favorite song helps us by the Beatles rolls into our second hour on the Joe Beaver Show. The doors will open tomorrow at 2. The tribute will start at 3. And the master of ceremonies for the tribute and the great life of one of the great souls of all time, Jimmy Anderson, will be celebrated in a variety of ways. Scott Spiegelberg is joining us here. And as Sandy Strand, my neighbor, Scott, we welcome Sandy and Tom both say hello to you. They said to say to you, they're listening. They pass along their greetings. They're neighbors of ours, Sandy and Tom Strand. They are delightful people as well, but they said to say hello to you and thank you for all that you do and that you are one of the great souls too. So it's appropriate that you get to be involved with the celebration for a man you've known and respected for a long time in Jimmy Anderson. It's sad, but it's also going to be, I think, a sweet tribute tomorrow for the great man. Scott, what are some of your thoughts about being asked by the family to conduct this event as a master of ceremonies?
Oh, hey, first of all, John and Mike, thanks for having me on. Very humbled, very, very humbled. Fifi called, oh gosh, emailed me about a month ago, said the time is drawing near, and we've talked as a family. We'd love for you to be part of the celebration of life, and would you consider serving as MC? Of course, that was a no-brainer for me. I've had such great respect for Jimmy from the fall of 1971. I got here as a freshman, young football player coming up, and who's this young, energetic assistant basketball coach, you know? And anyway, just wonderful to be asked, and very honored to be serving. So
yeah.
No doubt about that.
Thank you, Scott. And we'll talk about some of the speakers and the program and what people from the community can expect and even how they can contribute in a very real sense to what was important to Jimmy beyond just the game of basketball and Oregon State athletics. But you said you met him coming up in your context as a football player in the fall of 1971.
Right.
We've been asking a lot of people sort of what is their first encounter with or memory of Jimmy. But from that point through the rest of your life, from that time on, Scott, it sounds as though your lives have intersected in a variety of ways. Tell us about some of the travels with Jimmy. There's no greater ambassador than this man for Oregon State University.
No, two quick stories, Mike. The first being I think they called it the Noon, the NBL, Noon Basketball League at Gill. That was certainly the name in the 90s. But I think even back in the 70s, there were some coaches who would play pickup basketball at Gill Coliseum. And, you know, locker rooms, we had no Valley Football Center. There was no basketball center. It was Gill Coliseum and several practice fields. And anyway, being able to watch these guys playing, here's Jimmy probably in his 40s, you know, holding his own. And I thought, wow, what a handsome dude and very energetic. And that was one memory. And then just the constant connection through the years. I'd move back to Medford. Jimmy would come down sometimes to recruit or to speak at a Beaver Club meeting we had down there. He always reached out. And just he has been the, you know, you look at the lineage of Slatsgill and Paul Valeni and certainly Ralph Miller, my God, just all the years there. But Jimi Anderson is a link to the past, and that's why I think tomorrow's celebration of life will be so, I think it really will be a very happy and wonderful occasion. Fifi and the kids are awfully excited about honoring their dad that way in a more of a celebratory, celebratory mode. So you
just sort of answered my next question, and that was just for you. Are you going to be able to get through it? How do you feel now as opposed to maybe a week or two ago?
Thanks, John. You know, I think it's, you know, when you know something like this is imminent, you kind of brace for it. You see my own folks passing about, 26 years ago now, both in March, ironically enough. You just kind of wonder, and you think about their lives, and you brace for the inevitability. And so with Jimmy, sure, did we shed a tear earlier? You bet. But just again, what a great life lived, that wonderful family, his faith, so many things that he brought to the table, and his consistency, guys, through the years. He just never stopped loving Oregon State. And from the minute he stepped foot on campus till his last breath, he was a Beaver. And for that, he deserves to be celebrated.
Now, you were a football guy, so how did you get closer to the family and closer to Jimmy through the years?
Interestingly enough, John, the basketball office in 1971 was, believe it or not, in the football office. We shared, Coach Andros had an office, and Ralph Miller had an office that were literally adjacent to each other in the northwest corner of Gill Coliseum. They shared, Annie Harper would know this better than I, but there was a woman that was the secretary. Annie was Ralph's secretary. And anyway, so, you know, the meeting rooms and football, you'd walk by the basketball office. Hey, there's Coach Anderson. There's Coach Miller. Coach Miller probably back in there having one of his moors. He could rest. You know? But they were all connected, and it was such a close vibe. Go downstairs, get taped up for practice, and upstairs, my God, I think we had the ROTC was up on the second floor. We didn't even fill Gill Coliseum, believe it or not, with our staff in 52 to 53 years ago, which is kind of amazing, really. Wow.
Scott Spiegelberg joining us. He will be the master of ceremonies tomorrow for a program that the family has put together with an outstanding group of speakers. Perhaps, Scott, I know you have a kind of a final meeting today to put the finishing touches on what the tribute will look like. Again, it's at Gill Coliseum. Tomorrow afternoon, the doors will open at 2 o'clock. The tribute proper will begin at 3. We'll get to some of the particulars about how people coming can give to something that was important to Jimmy here in a moment. But what does the program look like? At least for now, Scott, what do you know about who's speaking? Maybe some musical things? I mean, what videos? Sure. What do you know, Scott, that could be in the works for tomorrow?
Sure. You bet, Mike. Well, first of all, spot on, 2 p.m., Kelly and Jill, Jimmy's daughters, have asked that everybody enter through the front doors, which I guess would be the east entrance facing the Beaver store. Look for some orange and black balloons, and that'll be the entrance. There will be seating on the floor. The stage, I'll say this, the stage will be on the west end of Gill, facing the Pro Throw Field and facing the Truax Center. The speakers, I mean, talk about a all-star lineup of Beavers, and you talk about Pac-8 and, mm-hmm. and Pac-10 and Pac-12 all-stars. How about this for leading off with Dave Gamby, a player with Jimmy, obviously, played with Jimmy. Then we go to Mel Counts, Marshfield great Mel Counts, and then a combo of Mark Radford and Lester Connor. They're going to both take the mic at the same time, represent that era. And then the incomparable Gary Payton will finish off the basketball segment of our. There's a starting five for you, and only to top all of that is All-American and All-Star Pat Casey, being the Hall of Famer Pat Casey, leading or doing cleanup on the whole speaking platform. So, what a lineup we have for that. There will be some music, Mike. There's a couple video presentations that will be shown. Jimmy's oldest granddaughter, Ariel, this would be Stevie's daughter, has put together a video of Jimmy's life, and that will be right near the end. And so I think it will be a room full of Beaver attire. If you want to wear Beaver attire, terrific. If you want to dress up, fine. But that'll be kind of the program. There'll be a coffee reception following, and they're sure hoping to get a chance to see a number of folks that they haven't seen in a long time or out-of-town guests that are coming, because I'm hearing a good number of people will be coming from out of town to attend.
Scott Spiegelberg joining us to talk about a momentous event tomorrow to celebrate the life of a great man in Jimmy Anderson. And just as you were touching on, I've been saying, Scott, here of late on the broadcast and so on, that we're talking about a man that touched eight different decades at Oregon State, beginning as a player in the 50s with Dave Gamby, and all the way through this year. I mean, my gosh, I'm getting emotional to John's question. Seeing Jimmy at games and practices this season in the fight that he was in, and what a fighting spirit he showed, and young men like Jordan Pope and Tyler Bilodeau both sharing with me how special Jimmy was to them. What an arc of a life, Scott. Dave Gamby to Jordan Pope. I mean, that's just amazing.
Yeah, think about that. That well said, Mike. That is, when you think about it, truly just really incomparable. You know, 67 years of Beaver, and again, the link with Slats and Paul and Jimmy, it's just it's phenomenal. And so it makes us all, we should all be so proud to be Beavers. And obviously, we're going through some crazy times in college athletics right now, but to have that foundation, that base, will always give me great pride and wonderful feeling to be an alum of this great, great institution.
You know, you mentioned the all-star lineup that spans eras with Dave and Mel Counts and Mark and Ray and Gary. I mean, that says a lot about Gary, making time to come up, because we've always sensed, and we'll get a thought on Pat here in a moment too, and Pat Casey, but Gary has always spoken with such great affection for Jimmy, and the decision that Gary made to come out of Oakland and come to Oregon State was life-changing for him and impacting, and he's glad he did, and he's never, in any moment I've ever been around him or heard him speak, Jimmy's always kind of almost first on his tongue and in his mind and heart, and I'm sure that'll be reflected tomorrow, Scott, in what he has to share, but hasn't that always been so impressive about how these young men speak of Jimmy in almost reverential tones, Gary being the last of it, he and Brent, but Gary being that last linchpin transcendent player who owes so much to Jimmy Anderson.
Amen, Mike. I was reading something earlier today about coaches visiting homes and the importance of a head coach or an assistant coach actually being in the home of a recruit with the parents, with the younger siblings. And I mean, there are a lot of statistics that will be, you know, be thrown around, and obviously we know a lot of numbers. How many homes did Jimmy Anderson visit in his career as a Beaver head coach, assistant coach, in all different parts of the country, all over the world, when you think about it? And to the impression that he made, his sincerity, his, I'm sure Jimmy would tell those mothers, hey, we're going to take care of your son. We're going to make sure they graduate. We're going to make sure they become great citizens in this life, and we're going to coach the heck out of them, and they will succeed. You hear that from a guy like Jimmy Anderson, and who is not going to sign on the dotted line?
Yeah. Hey, Scott, and then we'll close with a thought on one of the last of the speakers, maybe even after Gary, and that's a tough act to follow, but if anybody could, it's Pat Casey. Pat and Jimmy, great, you know, Pat's one of the great coaches in the history of college athletics, certainly within our state, and we all know and his legacy, but it's important to the family to they asked Pat to speak, and he's not, quote unquote, he's not in the same category as Gary and Radford and Bloom and Mel and Dave, having played with or for Jimmy. But boy, you talk about two guys who share so many things in terms of their love for the university, their love for student athletes, the way they coached them up, the way they build up young people. Pat's the perfect guy, in a sense, to close the official part of the event, because of the foundational things they share.
Boy, they are two peas in a pod in my books. Not only that, share a great faith as well. Mm-hmm. Beefy was telling me in these last few months before Jimmy could stop going to daily mass that Pat was usually there a couple rows behind, and maybe sometimes a word, maybe no word, but a look of respect to each other. Yeah. And I know Jimmy held Pat in such high esteem and vice versa. So couldn't ask for a better closer, you know, baseball terms, and Pat Casey tomorrow, no question.
Hey, and then in terms of that shared faith and the importance that both of those men and all that in talking to Pat and Jimmy, but the family has asked, and at the core of their lives, the giving and the love for a community. So in lieu of flowers, Scott, what's sort of the plan and hope with how important the work of St. Vincent de Paul through St. Mary's in Corvallis. Tell us a little bit about what the family has asked in terms of what the community can do to help honor Jimmy tomorrow.
You bet. Of course, Jimmy and Fifi volunteered for years at the St. Vincent de Paul Food Pantry down on 25th Street. And just, you know, I was just wondering, several years ago, I was involved with a little fundraiser they had, a Super Bowl of Caring fundraiser many of the churches in the local area had. And I think this was going back 10 years ago, but 250, 300 families were being served each week via the St. Vincent de Paul Food Pantry. That number has had to have grown. I've been down there a couple times in the last few months, and there's usually a long line on those distribution days. And sometimes it's food, sometimes it's a gas coupon. It's however we can help the needs of others, and gosh knows there's need out there. So a couple ways, Mike, this could be done. I'm going to throw this one out. If you wanted to bring, if folks coming to the Celebration of Life wanted to bring a card, an envelope, slip a check in there made out to St. Vincent de Paul, Corvallis, a check would be great. There'll be a basket there to collect sympathy cards, condolences, and those contributions. That's one way. People can certainly go online to St. Vincent de Paul, Corvallis. The address is stated there. It is 501 Northwest 25th Street in Corvallis, 97330. And it also can be made, those donations can be made online. Mm-hmm. And I believe there would be a designation in honor of Jimmy Anderson. And so a couple different ways to give, and I know they would, Jimmy and Fifi would be honored to receive any donation to support that cause, one they believed in so firmly.
Yeah, and we're so vitally involved with vitals, the right, a vital and beautiful, momentous life that impacted so many and so many generations to be celebrated tomorrow. Scott, I'm glad that you'll have a great voice in it, as will Dave and Mel and Mark and Ray and Gary and Pat and all of the people that will come. And again, I like the idea of bringing a card with, you know, perhaps in lieu of flowers, if you're going to spend money on flowers, write a check to St. Vincent de Paul Corvallis and slip it in that card. And that is a great way to pay tribute to a great life and a great man. And Scott, we really appreciate everything you've given to all of us in Beaver Nation through the years. And thank you for joining the show today. And we'll see you tomorrow at Gill Coliseum.
You bet. Mike, just a quick one before you go. I spoke with Jimmy's daughters, Kelly and Jill, just moments ago. And apparently it will be live streamed tomorrow. There has been an arrangement to live stream Jimmy's Celebration of Life at 3:00. And it will be through a YouTube channel. So there'll be months and years from now. If you wanted to go back and watch it, you certainly can. But they'd love to see everybody in person, but it will be live streamed. Okay. And also for those so inclined, there will be a mass at St. Mary's Catholic Church at 11 a.m. I know Tim Hennessy is preparing a eulogy there. And that'll be a great celebration as well to celebrate Jimmy's faith and life.
Yeah, and Tim has been such a presence in Jimmy's life. And, you know, the love that Tim has for Jimmy is profound. And just, you know, being one of the guys on a, you know, regular basis, day to day, in the last months and certainly throughout their lives. And Tim played for Jimmy and so on. But that will be a special time, too. So thank you for sharing that. 11 a.m. tomorrow at St. Mary's. Scott, thank you for taking time for the show. We'll see you tomorrow with, we hope, many, many, many from Beaver Nation. We're all invited, and it's the appropriate place to have it, certainly, at Slats Gill Coliseum. Thanks for taking time, Scott. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you. Scott Spiegelberg, our guest. Now, the life of Jimmy from Hoquiam. We have a young person from the same town, Amelia Moore, coming back in her life. I'm watching the curtain rising on a whole new set of dreams. Bruce Coburn, a good line. Amelia Moore, next on The Joe Beaver Show. The Joe Beaver Show continues. John has read. I have not had the opportunity to. He is going to print it out or send me the link or both. Aren't you, John?
It's infuriating.
Heather Dinich from ESPN.com. I think we were alerted via the University Honda text line by Tyler. A very interesting article.
Long.
And very long, as the long form articles are these days, and that's fine. But she touches on Washington State and Oregon State a good deal within it.
And the college football playoffs contract. And who gets what? How it all works. It's long because it describes everything, and
including where we are in that.
Where we are in it. As I read it, I'm just like, there has to be a giant lawsuit.
We may have to reprise Alan Thayer soon. Yes. So we'll get to that and touch on some of the salient points from that article that John is walking to the printer to retrieve. So in our last few minutes today, probably between 12:45 and 1 o'clock, we'll react to that, and we hope to take a call or a text or two in that window as well. But it is, I think it's in keeping with the spirit of life at Oregon State, in that we just spoke about one of the great souls ever to come out of Hoquiam, Washington, and the fact that Jimmy Anderson touched eight different decades of student-athletes here at Oregon State. It's appropriate that we end that conversation and talk to a young person from Hoquiam who just returned from a conference in downtown Phoenix. There were three Sarah Langs scholarship winners to this event: Abby Poole from Miami, University of Ohio, and another young woman, I think Anika Pafeli, a senior from New Jersey out of high school, and our own Amelia Moore from the Oregon State analytics team from Oregon State University, just returning from it. Congratulations, one of three in the country to receive a Sarah Lang scholarship to this event. We'll find out about Sarah in a moment, but Amelia, congratulations to you. That is a high honor. What was the experience like down there? What exactly did you get to do in interacting with others in your world through analytics?
Hi, Mike. So it was such a phenomenal experience being able to go down to Phoenix, meet some other women in baseball as well as some other young professionals who want to do and are already doing exactly what I do here at Oregon State at other schools. And being able to meet a lot of different people, I was really able to network this past weekend was super cool. And to be able to also listen in on some of the panels that they provided for us, as well as some of the ongoing presentations that we were able to watch live and in person. And they also just recently sent me the link so I can go back and kind of refresh everything I learned.
We'll get to that in a moment. When you say everything I'm doing at Oregon State, what do you do now? What is your field and role in Brad Brown's great program with all of you? What are you doing specifically, Amelia?
A lot of things, Mike, a lot of things. But specifically in the fall, we focus on player development. So running a lot of the technology that Oregon State Baseball has, being able to run that and then in turn take the numbers that we receive and analyze it, and being able to read the numbers and present research projects to our coaches and to be able to show our players and our coaches, this is what you're doing and this is why you're doing it. Now that we're in the season and everything's up and going, we've been doing our stuff. I'm one of five members on Brad's team, and we're in the middle of doing our scouting reports. So every week we've got a new team, so that's a new set of scouting reports that go out to the coaches, so we get the broad set of information off of different technology and platforms that we utilize and give them the broad information, and they're able to nitpick from there and come up with the best approach in the game.
Quick question for you, Amelia, on that. And in when you, like, for example, you go to the conference, you learn about new things that are coming in. Is every new thing that you do, does it require a new computer or a new piece of hardware, or are they just programs?
Yes and no. Some things are new pieces of technology and new computers and new programs, and some things are being able to utilize the information and the knowledge base we already have and look at it in a different way.
Amelia Moore, our guest. Amelia, how did you develop an interest in this field? There's a lot of like-minded people you were just with I could ask the same question to from this conference, but how did it kind of come about for you?
So actually, my start was just having an interest in baseball. So as you mentioned, I'm from Hoquiam, where Jimmy Anderson was from. My grandpa was a good, good friend of Jimmy's. Hmm. And my grandpa, as much as he loved basketball, was also a huge baseball fan and had a connection to the Flying Hawaiian, Shane Victorino. So I was able to watch a lot of Mariners games being from Washington, as well as a lot of Shane's games in person on TV. And growing up with baseball around me, I kind of just adapted my sport. I played a little bit of softball, a little bit of t-ball, but other than that, I just really, really loved the game. And I was fortunate enough in being able to go to Oregon State that we have such a phenomenal program that creates these opportunities. And really, I just needed my in to baseball, and Oregon State was able to provide me that. And I've fallen in love with everything that I do within my role with the team.
And so this conference, you had to write an essay, and you were selected as one of three scholarship recipients for the Sarah Lang Scholarship Award to this conference. Tell us who Sarah Lang is, and what was it about your essay that might have persuaded them? What did you kind of write about, and who Sarah Lang is, and what did you write about in that essay?
So Sarah Lang is a baseball researcher who's worked in the MLB, and unfortunately in 2021, she was diagnosed with ALS. And so Saber wanted to honor her and all of the work that she has done and all of the work that she continues to do, because even with this diagnosis, she has continued to work with the MLB and honor her in a way to bring more women into baseball. And so I wrote my essay, and I spent a lot of time working on it, on how do I implement why I love baseball, the work that I do, what I can want to continue to do, and how Sarah has impacted me seeing her be a woman in baseball and me wanting to be that type of person and have that type of presence that she has, taking all of those pieces and putting it into a less than 750-word essay. Took some time, but I was able to do that and fortunately enough was selected through the scholarship committee.
Okay, so you go down to this thing and you learn more, and you combine it with what you already know. What's the coolest thing that you like about these stats? What's the one that makes you, ooh, that's a cool stat?
So I actually, not only am I in the statistician realm, I guess you could say, I also am majoring in kinesiology. So I like the biomechanics and the body movement and how the body moves and how it functions and the numbers that we can pull from that and quantify, you know, what we're seeing. So there was a great biomechanics panel that was the first day of the conference that I just sat and listened, and is one that I'm going to go back and rewatch because I just really, really enjoyed it. So it wasn't necessarily a number or something new, but it was being able to listen to people who have been in the industry for a while talk about the things that I want to do was super, super cool. And they were talking about the difference in 4 camera systems versus 8 camera systems. Which is better? Is it better to have more cameras? Is less more, and that type of thing? And being able to see, like, are we making the right advancements here at Oregon State? And I feel as from what I've learned, we are definitely on that track.
Did you have to pick? I'm looking. You sent me a link to the speakers. Did you have to pick, or were you able to go to everything? I mean, here's rule changes, pitching and base running, rule changes, hitting and defense panel, baseball prospective founders panel, baseball's current and future application of AI panel, and then in the one you just alluded to, state of the baseball biomechanics industry panel. Well, here's a guy by the name, I think it's Michael Sane, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but his title, Michael Sane, baseball scientist, Chicago Cubs. I mean, these are terms and ideas that I didn't grow up with looking at the back of baseball cards in the 60s, Amelia, but that's a wide range of a lot of stuff. Did you get to sample a little bit of everything there?
I did. So they held the conference in the Buse Law Center at Arizona State, and essentially we were in one big room, and so I was able to attend most everything. Unfortunately, due to my flight back to Corvallis, I wasn't able to see any of Sunday's presentations, but all of Friday and all of Saturday, I was able to just sit and kind of absorb everything that I learned. And it's funny you mentioned that those are terms that you didn't grow up with. Brian Kenny of the MLB Network was hosting, or I guess he was the commentator for one of the panels. And he was talking about, can we get baseball back to the 1980s, or is all of this technology and information going to completely change it? And there was a little bit of mention of, we can get the play style potentially back there, but nothing will ever be the same with everything that we've learned.
And John's question was, kind of my follow-up to that is, was there one particular or two in this conference itself? You mentioned the biomechanics, but did you kind of come back and say, hey, Brad, I've got some stuff we need to talk about that I learned that we hope to implement here, maybe even this year, if not this year, going forward at Oregon State?
There was a lot of things that, concepts that we have already kind of discussed. I'm biased because I'm a part of the program, but I definitely have always seen us as a front runner, cutting edge on what we're doing within our program. And based off of what we've learned and what I was able to learn, I think that we're going to be just fine continuing to do the things that we're doing and the plans that we have for the future. I would also say that it was really, really cool being able to see they do something called the Diamond Case Competition, and it was schools with research teams that don't necessarily work with the baseball program but have an interest in the type of thing that I do within the DAM squad at Oregon State. And they're presented with a research topic. This year it had to do with, who does a foul ball benefit more, the pitcher or the hitter, and have their take on it and present. And so I was able to watch some of those presentations, and then there was an encore presentation for the winning team from Syracuse University, and it was super, super cool. And I was like, that is something that we should do. It was a fun experience to watch that and to see like-minded individuals come up with this research project based off of one question, and everybody that I watched had a phenomenal take on it.
Yeah, I can see that. And even this old man that you're talking to has one in that old aches and pain. Old aches and pains, a guy named Luke Appling, Luke Appling was skilled late in games. He could intentionally foul balls off until the pitcher was worn out. Okay, I'll just foul that. I'll foul that one. So who benefit? In that case, depending on the hitter and the pitching situation, and is the pitcher tiring? And back in those days, relief pitching was not a thing, really. And so he would just wear a guy out until finally the fastball was a little less fast or there was less bite on the breaking ball. And then Luke Appling, Hall of Famer that he was, would hit a line drive for a base hit to win a game. He would foul balls off intentionally, Amelia.
He could do that?
Oh, yeah. He had that kind of bat control and skill. Amelia, does that story resonate at all with your research about foul balls and who benefits?
From what I learned, yeah, you're on the right track there, Mike. That was kind of the take that Syracuse had. They had a few more quantifiable numbers and a little bit more research than that. But, yes.
Okay.
I have a quick question. Is there any number that comes across your purview where you say, okay, that's ridiculous, we don't need to know that? Or is every baseball relevant statistical number something that gets you excited?
I would say at some time there are so many numbers in front of me that I'm like, my mind is just boggled. I'm like, what the heck am I looking at? When we get CSV files of our TrackMan data, and we do a lot of analyzation through those numbers. Looking at one of those files can easily give you a headache when you don't know what the heck you're looking at. So for me, I like to break it down, start small, go back to the basics and say, okay, this is what I'm looking at. Here's our ERA. Here's our batting average. Kind of take those aside. And then I like to break it down and go little by little and then get into the bigger numbers, because eventually I'm like, yes, this is important and this is important and this is important, but you have to start small because otherwise you're just going to be overwhelmed, at least in my instance.
Hey, Amelia, let's close with And there's so much to unpack here, and we hope we can continue to do this as time goes by. But what is your long-term goal? What do you want to do in this space and profession?
As I tell Brad regularly, I want to take his job. Not necessarily, as much as I love the Beavers, as much as I would love to stay in Corvallis, not necessarily here at Oregon State, but be the director of biomechanic player development and advanced scouting, similar to Brad's role at a Power 5 university. At the end of the day is my end goal. I'd like to stay in the NCAA for now. If the Mariners wanted to hire me tomorrow, I'd be up in Seattle in an instant.
Yeah, I got you.
But as of right now, I'd like to stay in college.
Hey, Abigail, I can't even remember. I only have her in my contacts and know her as Abigail, who was a guest. I know she has a last name, but she came out of the program. Where is she working now?
She is currently at Driveline.
Okay. Now, is that, I mean, there's a lot. So it sounds like doors are opening in this world in a lot of ways coming through the program at Oregon State and others that are offering it. But do you feel like there are a lot of opportunities opening in the bold new world that baseball's embraced this world that you're in? And you feel like, hey, there's a lot of exciting stuff ahead for you?
I would say so. I don't think now that we've gotten into this statistical realm and this analytic realm, there's no turning back and these doors are continuing to open. And like I said, I'm fortunate enough to be with this program. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, Abigail, she originally had a fellowship with the Twins. And then once that fellowship ended, now she's currently working at Driveline's Kent facility. We've had other former analytics squad members who have gone to multiple programs and they're all over the baseball industry. So I think that there's no turning back now. They're just going to have to accept us.
That's great. And you're going to have a prominent place. You do now in what you're doing. Very important work, you and the rest of the damn squad. But Amelia, it is a real pleasure to get to talk to you about this. We look forward to following you and the ventures that are ahead. And I'll see you soon back at Goff Stadium at Coleman Field next weekend. Thanks for taking time, Amelia. I really appreciate it. And good luck to you the rest of the way this year.
Thank you, and thank you for having me on today.
You betcha. Thank you. Let's take a break, Doc. We'll come back maybe with a little summation, if possible, of Heather Dinich's work next on The Joe Beaver Show.
All right, here we go.
So, yeah, I mean, it's...
You just got one paragraph, yeah, and it's infuriating.
Heather Dinich, you know, here's her report. According to Pac-12 sources, Washington State and Oregon State are slated to earn just, that's her word, just $360,000 as independents in the new contract, just one-fifth of what the group of five schools would make per year in the new agreement. So not out of the group of five payout, they're less than that.
Right, right.
And historically, the Beavers and Cougs have each received between $6 and $7 million as members of the Pac-12, from $6 and $7 down to $342K.
And
in this new
San Jose State will get $1.8 million
and
no matter what they
do. $342
That is infuriating.
I know.
There's got to be a lawsuit in
Alan
here.
Alan Thayer, maybe.
Because the Beavers and Cougars didn't ask for any of this, and you cannot inhibit another entity from doing business.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. So Dave from Tumwater joins us. Dave, you were telling John apparently Toll was on this whole thing and the disparity a while ago. What do you got for us today, Dave?
Well, yeah, he had a podcast a couple of days ago. He broke the proposed revenue scheme out by percentages. But, yeah, the SEC and the Big Ten were going to get 29% each. The ACC, 17%, and the Big 12, 15%. He didn't mention Notre Dame, but I now see they're getting the same 15%. I think, though, fellas, I've got to reread the article. I would encourage you to do the same. I read a comment, by the way, over the weekend, proofreading as if your life depended on it. And I'm delivering my proofread manuscript to my editor next week. But I think the group of five, that's not per school. That's for the entire number of schools.
Okay.
So I think the amount Oregon State and Washington State get is called out and separate from the group of five numbers. And that group of five is inclusive of the larger number of schools think Oregon State and Washington State get more than, let's say, a San Jose State.
Well, okay. Okay. But what do you make of this paragraph? According to Pac-12 sources, Washington State and Oregon State are slated to earn just $360,000 as independents in the new contract. Here's the rub, Dave. Just one-fifth of what the group of five schools would make per year in the new agreement.
I think that's, but I want to go, I read it in a rush. John brought it to my attention. I think that total is for the entire class, the mini universe of group of five schools, not per school.
I could be wrong.
That's how I read it.
No, well, that would be really low. $1.8 million
distributed for
all the group of fives would be pennies per school. I don't think that's right. And I'm looking as we're speaking right now, by the way.
Yeah, because I don't think Heather would have framed the paragraph if you read it carefully. And we'll get into this more in the days ahead. But just one-fifth of what the group of schools would make per year in the new agreement. Then she develops the... They've gone from between 6 and 7 to 342,000. They are the only two schools receiving less money in the new revenue distribution agreement.
And listen to this, guys, and you'll love this. One group of five athletic director, this does not say what numbers are, but he says, it's like the Godfather's offer you can't refuse, one group of five athletic director told ESPN. And they're just absolutely, there's several group of five ADs that are saying this is ridiculous, but they had no strength to gather enough ADs to say, let's change this. And again, you're right, boy, Dave, you are so right about proofread, because, and I'm trying to find the paragraph that broke it down for the SEC and the Big Ten, they're getting, not only are they getting way more money than everybody else, which why should that be, but they're also getting control of how to format the playoffs. The other schools, the other conferences, the ACC, the Big 12, they actually relented control to the SEC and the Big 10 on how the whole thing would look.
Well, according to Toll, I think the sum and substance of the trade out is that all the parties other than Notre Dame and the SEC and the Big 10 were more insistent on getting access to the tournament rather than money, figuring that everything's going to change anyway. There'll be a whole new round of realignment. And in terms of the Godfather deal, I think we know what the subplot is there. The SEC and the Big Ten were obviously threatening to just go off and do their own thing with Notre Dame and exclude everyone. And so this is when you don't have leverage, this is the situation you end up in.
Let me just quickly read these two paragraphs, Dave. I'm sorry, because we got to get our last break in too. But let me just read these two paragraphs. The financial distribution for the expected 14-team playoff will look radically different than its playoff predecessors on an annual basis. For example, Big Ten and SEC schools will each be making more than $21 million, up from the nearly $5.5 million that schools in the Power Five conferences are currently being paid. So right now, you're in Power Five. Beavers and Cougars are in Power Five. You're getting everyone's getting, $5.5 million. So in the next year, assuming, let's say we were in a Power Five conference, it'd be, oh, by the way, those two conferences, each school gets $21 million. I would have a problem with that paragraph right there alone. Secondly, in the ACC, the schools will get more than $13 million annually, and the Big 12 schools will get more than $12 million each. Notre Dame is expected to get more than $12 million. As a source told ESPN, there will be financial incentives for any independent team that reaches the CFP. There will no longer be a participation bonus for any of the other leagues, a detail that was frustrating to some leaders in the group of five.
Yeah. Well, I can't add anything to that. My original reason for wanting to call, at the stream went out when your last guest came on, and I know I'm reverting here to previous order of business. I know you got to get a break in, John, but everyone I know pronounces it Hoquiam, not Hoquiam. I don't know whether your guest chimed in on that.
She did.
As I say the stream. And what did she say?
She said, Hoquiam. She gave it the Hoquiam, but... You know, and so it's a tomato type situation. Evidently, it matters. Now, it's not of any great moment, but Jimmy used to say Hoquiam. I used to, and when I called around to the Chamber of Commerce and two people at the high school I've talked to three different individuals who said it's hoquiam. So I guess it just depends on who you talk to.
I think that might be the archaic pronunciation, but certainly not the modern one. And it's not exactly like Oregon and Oregon.
Right.
I think they're just a preferred pronunciation.
Yeah.
Very good.
Thanks,
well,
Dave.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks,
guys.
Dave.
Hey, we'll talk more about these matters, I dare say.
Now we need to argue about Hecata or Hesita.
Or Yachats or Yaha?
Yeah.
Yachats?
Oh, no. That's
Yeah,
Yaha.
I know. Squim or Sequim? Hey, let's take a final break on the Joe Beaver Show.
The collective gave up the power.
You know, we have sort of been, I've mentioned you have too, Alan Thayer, if you, it's time to get back in touch with Alan based on this latest distribution model.
Yeah.
And not to say, I mean, Heather points out too in this fine article, Heather Dinich and Pete Thamel, so they had heavy hitters. Or is it Thamel? No, Heather Dinich or Dinich and Pete Thamel. Historically, they talk about the Beavers and Cougs receiving between 6 and 7 million as annually as members of the Pac-12. So you're going from 6 and 7 to 360,000 in the latest distribution. That's a fairly significant drop. In spite of this, they write, in addition to both schools ranking, both schools, Beavs and Cougs, among the top 30 in viewership in the country. Part of the Pac-12's position is that Oregon State and Washington State have been just behind the ACC and Big 12 and significantly ahead of the group of five during the four-team playoff era in the average number of weeks they spent ranked by the CFP selection committee. And yet, the Beavs and Cougs are relegated to a number that's below the group of five annual pay.
Right, and they didn't ask for it. They didn't do anything. And it happened to them by other forces, which, you know, we've always had kind of in the back of our minds, and we've discussed it with Alan and with Dave and other callers and listeners. We have kind of floated that idea that out there about an overall national collective lawsuit. What do you call that?
Antitrust?
Antitrust, or, but a collective lawsuit, mm-hmm. Whatever the word is. I'm drawing.
Class action.
Yeah, thank you.
On the fence.
That could bring the whole thing down. And people are like, well, okay, let's see what else. And we have for correct purposes, inside of a minute, we have kind of going, oh, okay, let's put that off to the side because we're worrying about what's happening right now with the Pac-12 and mm-hmm. the wretched 10 and getting the money. And okay, all that's done. But not because all that's done do we revisit this. I would have been fine leaving that alone and seeing, depending on certain fairness. But when you talk about fair and unfair, I mean, it's one thing to be a victim and cry every time something goes against you. It's another to look at something and go, okay, hold on. This is not right. This is not 6.5 million to 300,000. And, you know, a Wyoming or a UNLV or whatever is getting 1.8 million. No. So there's something there.
Okay. Yeah. Well. And whatever that something is in the days ahead, we'll try to come to grips with it. We thank you for joining us. Beaver Baseball tonight. See you soon.